This is Damien Levesque, and you've been listening to the Creepy Crap Podcast.
This program is intended for mature audiences. Parental discretion is advised.
Like, he's there, but he's bad and he's evil and everything else, but he's still good.
That dingo got my baby!
Oh, I can tell you, then I'd have to kill you.
We all enjoy our veggie right for breakfast, lunch, and
tea. You've just tuned into the Creepy Crap Podcast, the Australian horror podcast hosted by Daniel Craig. So it's time to pour yourself a glass of rainwater from the top end, grab a few shrimp off the barbie, and let's start the show. Also, just going to quickly mention, if you haven't seen The Cleansing Hour, be careful because this will be filled with spoilers and all that sort of stuff. So if you haven't seen The Cleansing Hour, sad as I have to say it, maybe don't listen to this, but, you know, otherwise, continue and enjoy the episode.
Welcome, Creepy Crapsters, to the Creepy Crap Podcast, Australia's favourite horror podcast, with your host, Daniel Craig. This is guest episode number 6 of season 2 of the Creepy Crap Podcast, and today I'll be chatting with Damien Levesque, the horror director behind The Cleansing Hour, the short film, and the full feature available on Shudder. He's also done short films in the Dark, Deadly, and Dreadful series, and The Asylum, Twisted Horror and Fantasy Tales. So that's Damien Levesque. He is a star on the rise, and he's made a great movie. We're mainly talking about The Cleansing Hour, so let's not waste any more time. Stay tuned after the chat. There will be a great little song called Lucy from a band called The Soaring Blackbirds. So stay tuned after the interview to hear them. So let's not waste any more time. Let's welcome Damien Levesque to the Creepy Crap Podcast. Welcome, sir. How are you?
My pleasure. It's good to be here.
What made you choose to stay behind the camera instead of in front of the camera? Like, you want to do directing?
Well, you know what? I did acting in high school, and I took some acting classes in college and I actually really enjoy it, but I really don't think that that's where my strengths lie. I think that that's an important part of just growing up, is sort of understanding, like, where are your talents best used? To be quite honest, I've known since I was like 12 years old that I wanted to make movies. I just didn't know. When you're 12 years old, you don't know what that means, but you just know that you want to do that thing that you're watching. I never really found myself completely drawn to acting the way that I'm drawn to writing and directing.
Yeah, so what was that? You just like, I want to make a movie myself or something like that? You're like,
exactly. That's exactly what it is. And that's exactly what I did. You know, I mean, I have the sort of age old tale of picking up mom and dad's camcorder and making my own movies and doing stop motion animation with Legos and that sort of thing. So that was totally my childhood. I mean, I still have a lot of those videos.
That's heaps good. You started early then. That must be such an advantage to later on, where you're like, I already know how to film.
It helps. And whenever you have to do a lot of the stuff yourself or do everything yourself, you have a deeper appreciation for how hard it is to make something. You know, to make a movie takes many, many hands and so much work.
What was the movies you used to make, the home videos? Were they horrors as well, or they were something else?
No, they were a variety of things. I mean, I did everything from, like I said, stop motion to, in high school, I made a Civil War comedy, which you know, I hope nobody sees, but it was a mixed bag. And I do love comedy quite a lot. You know, I made a comedy short film years back that I'm still very proud of, but you know, comedy is a tough nut, and I really think that I'm more at home with horror. I love horror for a lot of different reasons, more than any other genre. And I think that I have a lot more room to, there's a lot more that I want to do there before I move on to another genre.
Curious about that later on. Why is comedy hard? Is that because these days you don't know what's going to offend someone, or is just your humor may not be someone else's?
Well, you know, the offense thing is, just being completely honest, my knee-jerk reaction to that is, like, when it comes to comedy, it really doesn't matter who you offend. I really think that comedy needs to be sort of like an untouchable world of that you just can't touch it. And I think there are bad comics who do offensive comedy, but it's offensive because it's just not funny versus like offensive because like it triggers somebody. That's not why I don't pursue comedy at the moment. The reason why I don't pursue comedy mainly is just because, like, all the stories that I want to tell right now, well, not all the stories, but almost all the stories are in the horror realm. So that's the reason why I focus my attention there.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I was watching the short. The short's great, by the way. I love it. I watched it on that. Was it the Robert Rodriguez channel? I saw you there sitting there and all that.
Oh, no kidding. Is that where you saw it? That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. You looked real fancy in your chair and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to say, you got Heather Morris in it. The one, like, she's like the dancer choreographer or whatever. She's from Glee and all that sort of stuff. She was the main girl in the first one. Also called Heather. Was she not available for the feature film, or did you, like, she plays the cameo, she's in the desert and all that sort of stuff. Did you just go with a different actor, or she wasn't available? Or
the main reason for the different casting is just because, you know, the feature film is a different movie entirely. You know, I was really trying to fully differentiate the feature film from the short film. Even though the feature film has the same story as the short, I went in a lot of different directions creatively with the feature than I did with the short. I didn't want to tether myself to the short visually in any way. I wanted to have complete freedom to make a new movie. That was the main reason for casting it differently. You know, I love Heather. I think she's really talented, and I hope to make more movies with her. It's just that whenever you're stepping into a feature, there are a lot of things to consider. You know, my creative vision was definitely one of them. I wanted to try and make a movie that was set apart from the short film. The short film, you know, was very successful. It did very well. It won lots of awards. And I didn't want to hold the feature to the same standard as the short by casting all the same people in it.
There was only one scene that was the cops. That was almost scene for scene, only I think like maybe the screen and the eyes are slightly different and all that. How come you like that so much that you've left that significance?
Experience with, you know, going around the world with short film, the Korean cops were extremely popular, and it also like gave me the ability to add like another location that looked truly unique for a spectator watching the Cleansing Hour. It felt like just like a natural thing to just lift that from the short and put it into the feature. You know, it was edited slightly differently. I'm happy with it. I'm happy with the choice to have the Korean cops.
They're fun. I like how he's just sitting there eating like a whole plate of sushi in the car. Like it's not like a hamburger. Like that's their takeaway version of like the cops eating a burger or something like that.
Yeah, it is. We tried to make it. Actually, I did try to make it as accurate as possible, just culturally. And also, by the way, the short film, we were in competition in the Busan International Film Festival in Korea, and I went there. It was a whirlwind trip. I went to Seoul. I flew into Seoul for 3 days, went to Busan for the film festival, and then flew back. It was wild. I barely slept, and it was so much fun. What a great country. I can't wait to go back to South Korea.
That seems good then. I just assumed maybe it was just filmed in like a car park or something.
Oh, no. I didn't film it in South Korea, but we were in competition in a film festival.
Oh, okay. Yeah, just went there.
And Junho Ha is the older cop in the car, and he's actually a very famous Korean film actor.
Yeah, I looked up all his stuff. I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah, so whenever I was in Korea, I had all these people walking up to me like, how did you get Junho? How'd you get Junho? They all knew who he was. Like, he's the Tom Cruise of Korea.
Wow. That seems cool. Like, he goes for you, but it doesn't do ours. Like, we've been asking him for ages. It's not fair. Yeah. Can I ask, what was the elements, like you were saying, it was kind of like the short film was basically like, I guess, like a little sample, a little teaser of like, here's what I made. He got your interest. We moved on. What were the elements that you were happy and like excited to sort of expand on with the feature? What were you happy about?
Well, I was really excited to expand on like Drew and Max's relationship. You know, they have a history together. They've been friends. You know, I can relate to this in some ways because I have a couple friends who I've known for over 30 years. We went to Catholic grade school together. So like when you know somebody for that long, I mean, you have a history. Like you've been through ups and downs, good times and bad. And I think that's one of the things that was the most fun to sort of like open up in the feature film. And then of course I added the element of, you know, Lane being Drew's fiance. That is a whole nother dimension as well. And they both have a past, as we find out in the movie. That was really the most fun for me.
This might actually have more to you than I thought. The scariest scene in the whole movie to me, the bottle caps on the knees. Is that is that from like a past experience? What made you think of that? That thing is horrifying.
Thank you. Well, I'm a recovering Catholic and I can relate to other fellow recovering Catholics. I actually got the idea from a story that I heard from Guillermo del Toro, who is also a recovering Catholic, and told me that I think it was like his old Catholic grandmother or something like that would force him to walk to school with upside down bottle caps in his shoes.
Oh my God.
That's how I got the idea.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So that's apparently that pain and suffering draws you closer to God.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously. Yeah. It's so brutal. I see that. And then it's like, it's not bad enough that just kneeling on it that she's like, obviously it's building up to like the intensity. She's pushing on the back of the knees.
That's the, like, that's the Holy Spirit on the calf pressing down.
Oh yeah. Trying to like tell him to, it's this. And she's like, don't help him. The recurring theme as well. You've got Kyle Gallner in there. What was it like getting him in there? His resume of horror movies already is like as long as his arm. It's crazy. Yeah. Like, how did you get him in? Did that change the whole movie? Did you work around him? How'd you get him on board?
Well, my casting director sent the script to him. He really liked it. We sat down a couple of times and talked talked about the movie. You know, I think we gelled well, and he believed that I had a vision for this movie that was going to make it possible and be able to pull it off. And, you know, I think also just like personalities really click. And, you know, I think Kyle is a really genuine, down-to-earth person, and so am I. You know, there's no pretense with any of us. Like, with either of us, we are who we are, and we're not putting on a show. We don't do the Hollywood BS, all that. It just worked out. And, you know, I had the best time working with Kyle because he's so bloody talented, and that really can't be overstated. He's one of those guys who makes what he does look really easy. As a result, makes my job a lot easier too. I mean, I'd be filming and he'd ask me like, so what do you think? Like, was that what you wanted? And then I was, because like, you know, he's like, he wants to hear what I think of the take that we did. And like, I'm just so floored. I'm not saying anything, like, which, you know, was a mistake on my part. Like, I need to tell him like what I'm thinking so he understands he's giving me what I want. And like, the truth is like, I'm just so like happy with what he's doing. And I'm like, okay, wow, that's freaking awesome. I'm thinking about other things, you know. But so Kyle is just such a great guy, so talented, so professional. This is obviously the reason why he is so prolific, because he is all of those things and everybody wants to work with him because he's such a nice person, which I'm telling you is like, in this business, it's 70 or 80% of the job. Just be a nice person, you know, and keep your hands to yourself, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but it was great. Like, and then the whole cast was great. You know, Ryan auditioned for the role, and he, the role of Max, and gosh, like, what a phenomenal actor Ryan is. Like, he's one of those people who, you know, I think has really got a very long career. And Alex, you know, Alex, we found her on a lark. We did an open call because we had auditioned a bunch of people, and nobody was really clicking for me for the role of Lane. And that was, you know, arguably one of the most important roles in the movie, because it's effectively two roles. You know, she's playing the demon and Lane. So we did an open call, and we had over 3,000 submissions. Casting director, bless her heart, sifted through all of them and sent me the best ones. And I saw Alex's tape, and I was like, wow, that's it. She's delivering these exactly how I hope, exactly how I imagined. She gets it.
What did they have to practice with? Did they have to pretend to like change character mid thing? Is that how she had to win? Like, was she had to be like normal Lane, and then suddenly like, the devil's in me and all that?
I think the sides we sent did do some of that. I think that maybe we had her go back and forth. We had her like audition both roles. Yeah. I mean, it was awesome. I mean, the cast really made the movie possible just because they were all so on, you know, they were all so on point and didn't waste any time because we were waiting on them. Like, it was, if anything, they were always waiting on us. Great cast. Very, very blessed to have them in this movie.
You had the whole, like, the intro part, which like sucks you in straight away with the feature. Holy shit. Like, you're like, what is happening here? You know, the whole, like, the gurney or whatever it was goes up, and then it sort of goes, oh, good show, everyone. That's a wrap. And it cuts off. And then you see like all this behind the scenes. Was the behind the scenes element of it, was that something you were just happy to like? Because I remember seeing you talk about these shows are sort of like, they suck everyone in and that sort of stuff. Was this trying to like expose them in a little way? The whole, here's the effects, here's that. Or was that just part of the movie that had no hidden meaning or anything like that, that you were kind of like showing that this is how they fool you?
Are you referring to like whenever Tommy like turns on the smoke and makes the lights and that sort of thing? That background is there just to sort of show how these guys are doing this show. Like, show that, you know, they've got a professional setup. They've always got some new trick up their sleeve for like how to do special effects, fool an audience. We're breaking the fourth wall of their show by showing all that stuff. So that's the reason why it's there.
Is the snake thing a joke? Like, he's got these old school terms and stuff like that. Is that something that related to you with making movies where he's, oh, watch out for the snake over there? And she's like, it's not called that. Was that like inside joke or something like that?
The term snake, I think, refers, I've heard it mostly in audio production, that the, you know, the snake is like your primary, is like a big bundle of cables that carries all the signals in an audio show, like in a concert or whatever. I've not personally heard that term used on a movie set. It doesn't really matter. It's an industry jargon. And like, it's the bratty film school kid correcting, you know, the guy who's been doing it forever. Even if she's right, it's an inappropriate thing to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's why I wondered if that was some sort of like moment that had happened previous to you or something like that, you know, where it's like some new person's come up. Oh, well, there's actually this. Oh, you don't do it in 4K? Oh, that's old school. And like, it's our movie. You know, get the drinks for us or something.
Right, exactly. I love Riley. Well, she's such a great touch to the story, you know.
Curious, like, just for my own sake, with the start of the movie, the short film, it's very obvious. The sound guy's got the cult marking and he's coming in sort of, you know, oh, hey, touches her, brings the demon in, that sort of thing. How does the demon involved with these guys? Like, they've been doing it for so long and then suddenly it happens when Lane there? Was it something to do with the drugs?
So this is a big point of differentiation between the short and the feature. In the short, the demon sort of gets into the girl because of the sound, right?
Yeah.
In the feature, we don't really explain how the demon gets there. I never really thought that you needed to, you know, if anything, you can make the argument that these guys have been like faking exorcisms forever. If anything, they're taunting demons to show up to actually like get their comeuppance. And once the demon arrives, I always felt like the audience is just going to go along with it. You know, like they're there for the ride. We don't need to get into like the complexities of how it got there. The only thing that I really did do in the script was I felt it was sort of necessary to show the devil had been planning this all along for a long time. So he used demon possessed homeless people out on the street to take out Dante, who was supposed to sit in the chair that day. So like, this is like, if you look at the big picture of this going all the way back to Max and Drew's childhood, the devil kind of like was planning for all this to happen and set up all the,
so they had to use Lane instead of someone else. It's an amazing movie. Is Max actually, I know there's a whole point which explains he's like, I know he's not an actual exorcist. They explain that, like, you know, I tried, they wouldn't let me, my one dream. But is he a father at all, or is it purely just a character role he plays?
It's a character role, but, you know, fun fact, Ryan Guzman actually attended some kind of like boys, all boys Catholic school that's meant to groom him for the priesthood. So like, I had no idea about this whenever Ryan auditioned. That's the truth. Like, he actually went through this. So he had a lot of like childhood preparation for this role, which is kind of crazy to think about.
Did you know that when he auditioned, or
No, I didn't. I think he told us at the audition after he did the audition.
And the other part that was really great when you watch the movie, which almost like, it's kind of like watch it and then watch it again instantly, is the mini movie, the whole reading the chat part. It's hilarious. You have to like kind of just watch the movie properly and then read that. Did you write all that sort of stuff? All those messages?
I wish I could say that I did. So yeah, you're right. There is another movie. It just, if you go back and you watch and you pause on every chat feed, there's another movie entirely in just the chat feed, which is so much fun. Basically what I did was, you know, when the movie was locked and we finished editing, I had friends over, and then like 15 friends over, we got them all liquored up, and then we sat and we watched through every scene, and then on a shared Google Doc, everyone is typing in chat text. That chat text is what was used to create those graphics for the chat feed.
That's awesome.
So it was great because we had a really diverse group of friends who spoke different languages and who are from different backgrounds, who did a really good job of sort of creating this realistic, you know, group of spectators and the kinds of horrible and nice things that they would say.
There's so many quotable things in that thing. There was one, I think it was like Manhattan Minute and like all this stuff where you're just like, what are these? The first time you watch it, it's like, you have to watch it twice.
Because it goes by so fast. If you watch it on a like a movie theater screen, more of it pops out because it's obviously so much bigger. It's a great excuse to watch it a second time.
It's really good. Is there any actors that in your career, like in the future and that sort of stuff, have you got that one person, even if it's past or present, that you just wish you could have worked with or work with?
There are a couple actors who I really want to work with on my next movies. I've got two movies teed up right now. Hilary Swank, Julia Garner, Cillian Murphy, Saoirse Ronan. Those are a few I'd love to work with.
Anything coming up in the pipeline?
Yeah, definitely. No, I've got the next one I think that's like right around the bend it's a contained creature horror, body horror, that I'm really, really excited about because it's, you know, it's all set in a house during a blizzard during Christmas time. So it's sort of like blending those Christmas horror elements, which I think is going to be really a lot of fun. And it's all practical effects, full size monster, all practical. It's going to be great.
That sounds amazing. That's a good thing with Christmas movies, because then you end up getting every Christmas, you become that movie everyone wants to watch. You know, move out of the way, Krampus. It's your movie now.
I hope so.
I didn't think of that.
Shudder next Christmas. Let's tee it up for Shudder.
Thank you so much for coming on the Creepy Crap podcast. It's been absolutely amazing talking to you. Thank you so much.
Don't worry about it. We should, let's do it again. Let's do it again in the next movie.
Cleansing Hour is absolutely amazing.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
If you've liked what you've heard today and want to reach out to the Creepy Crap podcast, here's how you can do it. You can reach me at Twitter at Creepy Crap Pod. That's Creepy Crap Pod on Twitter. Or you can check out the podcast-related videos on YouTube at Creepy Crap Podcast. Subscribe to the channel on there. Creepy Crap Podcast is also on Facebook. You can follow the page on there like that. Or you could get the personal page, Daniel Crapstar. That's Facebook, Creepy Crap Podcast, or Daniel Crapstar. And for the main home of the podcast, you can follow on Instagram at the Creepy Crap Podcast. You can send a message there, talk about a collaboration, suggest a movie, talk about promos, any of that good stuff, that's the Creepy Crap Podcast on Instagram. And if you want to suggest the podcast to someone else, you can get me on all the major podcast platforms. That's right, that's Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, all of them. You can go on there, you can rate, leave a review, like, follow, all that good stuff, download some episodes. That's on all the major podcast platforms. That's where you can listen or follow the Creepy Crap Podcast. So that was guest episode number 6 of the Creepy Crap Podcast, season 2 with your host Daniel Craig. And what a great guest, Damien Levesque, The Cleansing Hour. Check it out, it's an awesome film, I fucking love it. And our musical guest this week's episode is The Soaring Blackbirds with their song Lucy. You can check them out at The Soaring Blackbirds, a rock and roll band. They fucking rock and roll. That's Lucy, she makes me juicy. So that's the song, it's going to finish out guest episode number 6, Damien Levesque of the Creepy Crap Podcast, Australia's favourite horror podcast, with your host Daniel Craig. Soaring Blackbirds, play us out.